on Rise FM in 60 minutes. It's a pleasure to have you before 10 minutes, that is to 8. And, you know, as mentioned earlier on in the program, I'll be joined this evening by speakers who are experts and pioneering the research that is ongoing at the Kruger National Park. And now I bring in Professor Michelle Miller. She's also, you know, a professor there at the South African Research Chairs in Animal TB, and she's you know, she's working side by side with her team, I suppose, from the Stellenbosch University in the Faculty of Medicine and Health Science. Prof, a very good evening to you. Thank you so much for taking a call.
I'm thrilled to be joining you this evening and talk about the work we do.
Yes, you know, Prof. You know, you mentioned that, you know, earlier before we went on air that, you know, you were scared that, you know, this conversation might not be ongoing simply because of load shedding. But how much of, you know, the inconsistency of electricity then tends to affect the work that you guys do in the park?
That's a great question. I think because we do a lot of our work and a lot of collaborations with other researchers. And in fact, I work remotely. I'm based here in Skukuza with the Veterinary Wildlife Services Unit. And my research team is in Cape Town, that when we have load shedding and the cell phone signal or the internet goes out, it really hampers the communications and the collaborations we have with trying to coordinate, our activities and movement of samples and getting results back to the people that need them.
Yeah. You know, Doc, I suppose, Prof, in 2016, I was just, just now chatting to Dr. Peters, Peter Bass. He was mentioning that in 2016, in the park, it was reported that, you know, an animal was found having, you know, human TB. In your view, how did that, you know, elephant in the Kruger National Park contact that human strain of TB?
That's, again, one of the big questions that we have as well. So it was actually my research team that helped with that examination of the animal and collected the samples and identified, again, that it was, in fact, human TB. We all believe that if we ever found TB in an elephant, it would be the cattle strain, and we assumed that when we looked at it, but then when we did all the molecular testing, we were very surprised to find that it was human. Human TB in animals, particularly elephants in zoos, it's not particularly uncommon for them to get human TB. And that's usually because they're in close contact with people that are infected. And in that case, we didn't expect that a wild African elephant would have close, prolonged exposure to an infected human. So then we start to think about possibly that elephant going into maybe some of the tourist areas or the staff areas or even outside the park, where there might be food or other material that might be contaminated from humans that they picked up. And so it's difficult to say, but the strain that we looked at actually is a strain that's commonly found in Limpopo and Mpumalanga in human TB patients. So we know it came from this area.
But then does that mean that, you know, humans have the similar, you know, genetic makeup to that of elephants?
Not really. Tuberculosis is a bacteria ancient, and they've even found evidence of TB in mammoths from 14,000 years ago. So this has been around for a very long time. And even 2,000 years ago, in some of the ancient writings, they have described a disease that looked like tuberculosis in Asian elephants. So we think it's a fairly new disease introduced to African animals, but, it's one of those pathogens that that seems to be able to evolve a little bit faster than the other animals and human species that it infects. So it's always a little bit ahead of the curve, and it can affect a large number of different species, not just mammals, but even things like birds and aquatic animals.
Bumalanga, in case you just joined to the conversation, the professor for the South African Research Chairs in Animal TB, Prof. Michelle Miller, is my guest this evening. We're looking at some of the work that is currently being done at the Kruger National Park and, you know, in various other fields that, you know, the prof has been in, just examining animal TB. Now, Prof, if animal, if elephants can contract the human strain of TB, can human contract, you know, the Bonavine TB, and also what are some of the impacts of that into the tourism sector?
That's a wonderful question because, in fact, the bovine form or the cattle form of TB has been, again, around in humans for centuries. And before we started doing things like pasteurizing milk, that bovine form of TB was fairly common. About 20% of the TB cases in humans were caused by that cattle form of TB. That is much less today, although it's still a big concern in developing countries where we don't really always, when a patient gets diagnosed, we don't always know which form of TB. We assume it's the human form of TB, but again, because of our closer interactions with animals, especially in rural areas, it could be the bovine form of TB, and that form of TB is actually harder to treat than the human form of TB in humans and animals.
Upon the research that you have, been ongoing at the park, have you found any other animals that have died or got sick with TB other than that one of 2016?
At this point, we've found evidence of the cattle form of TB in two other elephants that did not die of that, but were infected. And we're continuing to do research to look for the presence of that bacteria, because one of the questions we have, just like you asked, is where the animal's getting TB, especially the human TB. Could it be from the environment that gets contaminated? And if that's the case, obviously all of the animals here in the park are potentially susceptible to being infected. So that includes things like rhinos, lions, the different types of antelope, warthogs, right down to the mongoose and more other small mammals.
You know, Doc, when you look at, Prof, you know, when you look at the TB treatment in humans and, you know, how it's done, normally it's over a 6-month period under the supervision of humans. And, you know, how would the treatment be administered in the wild, and is it even treated?
Again, really excellent question. We can treat selected cases in animals, but it requires special permission because tuberculosis in animals is a controlled disease, which means that people, the regulatory officials in the Department of Animal that has TB, because it can be a potential source of transmission or spread to humans. And so generally it's not recommended to treat animals. In very selective cases we do. However, it requires very long, intensive treatment. And just like in humans, we use the same combination of multiple drugs that have to be administered every day, and generally that treatment is even longer. It's usually between a year and a year and a half. So it's not practical to do in a wild animal unless it were to be confined, and it would take very special circumstances. So more importantly, rather than identifying infected animals and treating individuals, what we're trying to do is understand the disease, the source of the disease, how it spreads, and then in populations that don't have TB, we want to protect them from moving animals from sources that might be infected. So we want to develop tests to screen animals that might be going into those populations to protect them and prevent this from occurring.
Professor Michelle Miller is my guest this evening. We're looking into animal TB and the great research that is currently being done at the Kruger National Park. Now, Prof, what sort of protective measures do you have in place to protect yourselves and your team from being infected, you know, as you conduct the tests?
Well, again, great question. Generally, when we work with specimens or samples and we're trying to culture them and we're working with live bacteria, we do that in a biosafety laboratory that's called a BSL-3. And that requires us to wear full protective suits, gloves, and even respirators. And it's in a special laboratory with filters for the ventilation and things like that. We can work with samples that are otherwise killed, that contain killed bacteria, without those extensive measures. But out in the field, of course, one of the greatest things is that the environment itself helps protect us. We have good ventilation. We have UV from the sun. We have, you know, drying. And, of course, we wear masks and gloves and use the proper kind of safety measures in terms of handling the materials and things.
Maybe let's look at the possible dangers then that TB strains tends to have on the other species when they cross over. Talk us through there, Prof. What sort of danger does it then expose the other species when these TB strains cross over to them?
Well, we certainly know that TB, the cattle form of TB in livestock, so goats, cattle, and that is the same form that gets into our buffaloes, that can cause a chronic infection that can lead to weight loss and just loss of condition, and eventually the animals do die of TB. Mm. In wild animals, oftentimes those animals become a little bit weaker, they're lagging behind, and so in the case of buffalo, for instance, they may be more susceptible to predators before they actually die of the disease. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, for predators like lions and wild dogs that eat infected prey, they themselves can become infected. Mm-hmm. And that can lead to infections, again, both in the lungs, but also in the bones and other organs. And very similar, it can be a chronic disease that eventually causes them to be debilitated and not be able to hunt.
Mm. Prof, before I let you go, you know, at this stage of your research, what are you able to disclose? And, you know, what sort of other quests and also research processes, you know, are still ongoing in answering some of the questions that are there?
Well, I think just like the disease itself, TB research can be very slow, but we've made some significant progress over the last, especially decade, in first of all, identifying species that can become infected, and then looking at, does that infection actually cause disease, or can those animals, if they are otherwise in good condition, be able to potentially limit the infection or maybe even clear it if their immune system is working. And that's really important because it doesn't uniformly cause disease or death. And what we want to do is understand how we can provide the right kind of environment. So, you know, as stress-free as possible. And you know, our concern is with climate change. How is that going to affect the immune systems of animals? And will it make them susceptible to diseases, not just TB, but other diseases that can threaten the survival of the population? So we think of it as a bigger impact on what's happening at the population. We know it can impact an individual, but the question is if that individual can stay healthy long enough to reproduce, it may not really have a serious impact on the population. So those kind of studies often take decades for us to really completely understand, but I think we're slowly making progress.
Yeah. Prof, I know I said it was the last question, but I suppose, you know, looking at the work and, you know, the way you have described the work that is ongoing at the park, you know, are private funders or, you know, private players willing to fund such, such research and processes?
You know, work in wildlife is always a little bit lower on the scale in terms of funding for research compared to things such as diseases in humans and also in economically important species like livestock. So the funding is scarce, but we have been able to acquire some international grants. We have some grants through the National Research Foundation here in South Africa and a number of other private individuals that have provided donations to help us with this research to keep it going, because it is expensive to do. And we, you know, the team is limited, of course, by how much funding we can get to do the work. But I think that as we create awareness, we're also getting the opportunity to collaborate and acquire more funding.
Prof, really appreciate talking to you this evening, and it's a pleasure for you to come and divulge some, you know, such great information that is coming through there from the park, and I wish you nothing but great success.
Thank you so much, and I really appreciate the time you've taken to talk with me.
Really appreciate, Prof, there.